Mr. Sharim in the 11th parak is going through Midas Anakiyus, and at this point he's discussing Midas and how a person who's going to be a Naki, it's not just enough to be away from Averus, you have to be clean from Midas Ra'os. And he began by discussing Gaiva. So now we're going to talk about Ka'as. Unadaba Atamina Ka'as. Now we'll discuss anger. Hine. Yesh Haragzon Sha'omru Alav. The Gemara says there are people whose temper is such that if one gets angry, it's as if he does avodah zarah. This is the fellow who gets angry at anything that's not to his liking. He's just filled with anger. He can't think straight. He can't give good counsel. This kind of person would destroy the whole world. If he could, he's not thinking straight. He's totally without sensibility, like the animals who attack each other. On him we say, the person who is destructive in his anger. Because of him, the world would be barren and desolate. This kind of person would very easily transgress all kinds of sins if his anger brought him to that. There's not other motivation but his anger. Wherever it takes him, he goes. Now, there's another kind of fellow who's angry, who gets upset, but not like this. This person doesn't get upset for everything that doesn't go his way, big or small. But when he does get angry, his anger is enormous. That's what we learn in Avos. There are people who don't anger easily, but when they do, they don't calm down easily either. This is certainly very bad. Terrible things could occur during his anger fit. Then he can't undo what he has damaged and destroyed. Then there's someone else who's even less. He really is not easily upset. And his anger is very minimal. He'll always think straight. But he's upset. But he's thinking straight. This person is certainly very far from the damage and destruction that we mentioned of the earlier levels. But he's certainly not a Naki either. I won't even call him a Zahir, let alone a Naki. Because as long as the anger has its impact on him and makes an imprint, so he's not free from the trait of having a temper. There's one even less on this. He's very hard for him to get upset. His anger is not destructive. A little bit. How long does the anger last? Rega, a moment. Not more. The time it takes for his anger to get aroused, his understanding comes up against it and tells him not to be angry. Tell us, there's a kasha lichois v'noyach letzos, the person who's hard to anger and easy to appease. This is really a good lot. Because it's natural for a person to be motivated to anger, if he moves gabra love, and if he overcomes it, shafila b'shasa kasatzmo, l'yiver harbeim is gabra love, that when he's angry, he doesn't let it become large and out of line. Shafila oso hakas hakalo yamad bozman gadol yavilech. That kas itself is very light, it doesn't last, it just goes away. V'adai shiror l'shvachu, it's praiseworthy. V'amazal toile eretz al blimo, the Bereshim hangs the world on blimo, what does that mean? The world stands and survives on the person who closes his mouth in a time of quarrel. His nature has already been aroused to be upset. But in his gevura, he keeps quiet. But there's a higher madriga. Hila Zakin is the highest madriga. He just never got upset. There was never even the motivation to be upset. That is Naki. That's the person who's free from kas entirely. Even for mitzvahs, Chazal tells not to get upset. Even a teacher, a rebbe with a student, a parent with a child. Doesn't mean you don't discipline. You do discipline. But you discipline without anger. You have to guide them in the right path. And if you want to pretend to be angry, you can pretend to be angry, but it can't be anger from the heart. Don't be quick to get upset. And it says in Eov, the fool is killed by anger. A person is discernible in three traits, bekoso, bekiso, ubekaso. How he behaves when he drinks, how he spends his money, and what is his temperament when it comes to anger. So that's the Ramchal's presentation on kas. And like with Gaiva, he describes different degrees and levels. You have the fellow who's very easily upset, gets upset at everything, and he is out of control when he's upset, and that person will do all kinds of chatoyim, and it could be compared to someone either over the Zara. It's a terrible characteristic. Then you have the person who doesn't get angry so quickly and for every little thing, but he gets angry. And when he gets angry, you want to stay away from that person. That's also bad. Then you have the person who is less than that, and he doesn't easily anger, and his anger is not an outburst when it happens, and it's certainly better than the others, but he doesn't control his anger. The fact is, he still gets upset, and he still gets angry. And the higher madrig is the one who's the kashul lichos v'narech tzeis, the one who it's very difficult to upset him, and then right away he controls himself and he is appeased. And that's the tremendous madriga, and the world survives on people like that who, at the time of Meriva, they don't say what they want to say. They really want to answer back, and they don't answer back, and they keep quiet. It's a tremendous madriga. But it's not Naki. Naki is Hil Hazokin, who just doesn't get angry. Nothing bothers him, doesn't get angry. Now, on a practical level, there are very few people who are like Hillel. Never get angry about anything. How does a person get to be like Hillel? Or even the one who is Boilem Piv Mishas Meriva, the one who's less than that, the Noyach Lirtzois. I think it's fair to say that a lot of this has to do with the previous character trait that the Ramchal discussed, which was Gaiva. When a person has Gaiva, he will get angry because he believes that things are supposed to be the way he sees them. And when things aren't the way that he wants them to be, the way he'd like them to be, the way he expected them to be, so he has an outburst. If a person does not have those expectations, if a person does not believe that everything has to be the way I want it to be, then he won't get angry. The reason he gets angry is because it's not the way he wants it to be. It's not the way he expected it to be. If there was no expectations, there's no anger. And I believe this is at the core of anava, when I don't have any expectations, no one has to do anything for me, I don't expect anything, so then why would I get upset? I think there is this relationship. If a man comes home from a hard day at work, I've had this happen, people come to me with this, and supper isn't ready. So he's upset. Why is he upset? My wife's home all day, she's not working. I'm tired, I'm hungry, I expect to come home and have supper. Is that too much to expect? Is that, am I unreasonable that I should think that she's sitting home all day, whatever she's doing with her time? I don't ask what she's doing with her time, but is it too much to ask that I come home from work and there's dinner ready to eat? And it was a real Shalom Bayis issue. I ended up sending the counseling. But the fact is, he was upset because he expected to have dinner and get home. And it probably was not an unreasonable expectation. But if someone comes home after a hard day of work and has no expectation of getting dinner, so I don't know what that says about his Shalom Bayis either, that he's not getting dinner when he comes home from a hard day at work. But he's not upset. He's upset because he expects to have supper when he gets home. And is that too much to ask of his wife? That's all she has to do during the day. He leaves to work at 8 in the morning, comes home at 6, he's tired, he's hungry. You have 10 hours. Somewhere in there, can you make me supper? So this couple needed counseling. But this is where the anger comes from. The anger comes from an expectation that's not being realized. Now you have to decide, is the expectation realistic or not realistic? But someone without expectations isn't upset. So the reverse is the story, I don't know if it's true or not, the story of the guy who comes home, and before he walks in the house, he says to himself, the house is going to be a mess, supper's not going to be ready, things will be upside down, and he's ready to walk in the house. And wow, the house isn't a mess. Supper's even ready. It's amazing. And he's so excited, and he's so happy, and grateful, and appreciative. And if it wouldn't have been, he wouldn't have been upset, because he already psyched himself up that it's not going to be ready, and it's not going to be prepared, and the house won't be orderly. And that's what he's psyched himself up to before he walks out the door. So if that's his expectation, then there's nothing to be upset about if it isn't, or it is the way he, in his mind, anticipated. And this concept, I think, goes like very far. It's very far. Think about the things that get you upset. I think 90% of the time it's because you had a certain expectation that was not met or fulfilled, so you're upset. Now, again, maybe your expectation was realistic. Maybe it was unrealistic. But either way, whether it's realistic or not, that's why you're upset. You're upset because you expected something and it wasn't the way you expected it. And if I would never have expected it, I wouldn't have been upset. People go for simchas and they are away from home. They put up at someone's house, there's going to be meals prepared, and sometimes it works out great, sometimes it doesn't work out so great. Some people are gracious about it, some people are upset and kvetch about it, and it all depends on your expectations. If you weren't expecting anything wonderful, then whatever you get, that's great, that's lovely. And if you had all these high expectations and one after the other, they're dashed, you get grumpier and grumpier and grumpier. And again, it's this way with so many things. Now, you may argue that to have no expectations in life is a pretty dismal way to go through life. How do you go through life without ever having anticipations and expectations and plans and stuff like that? So I think the answer to that is that we do have plans and we do strive for certain things. But we know that not everything that we strive for and plan for is in our hands. And if it doesn't work out the way I planned or hoped, then I shouldn't be upset. I do my hishtalos, I do my best. And I hope to do these things, I hope to achieve these things. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But again, the anger that simmers in people, there are people who are angry people, there are people who are bitter people. And they're very sad, it's very sad, these people. And they're not pleasant to be around because it spills over and affects the people around them. It's sad because things in life didn't go their way. They thought things would be like this, it turned out like that. And again, it's a question of how much we're sold on our own plans, so to speak, on our own imagined way things should be. And things aren't always the way you think they should be. And again, maybe you're expecting unrealistic in the first place. That's also possible. So I think ultimately the bottom line is, the bigger the anav, the less likelihood to have kas. So Hillel HaZaken never got upset. He was imperturbable. You could not upset him. He was a tremendous anav. And he didn't have expectations, and he didn't have, you know, whatever it is. And he just couldn't get under his skin. In more recent times, if you'd read the Rabbi Levine biography, Tzadik in a Time, it's the same kind of thing. He didn't get upset. He was tremendous anav. He didn't have expectations or plans that could be dashed or unmet to get him upset. Moshe Rabbeinu, anav mikol adam. How many times did he get upset? He got upset. He didn't get upset. He was upset with B'nai Tiftamachamas Midyan. And the Gemara says he forgot halacha. He got upset. He forgot halacha. In his anger, he forgot it then. Anger is not good. It distracts you. You can't think straight. Why was he angry? He was angry l'man Hashem. It wasn't a personal thing. It wasn't a personal issue that he was upset about. He thought that there's something wrong. He got upset at them. And they explained that they didn't do anything wrong. It was okay. He didn't realize, you know, that kind of thing. So Moshe Rabbeinu generally did not get upset. But you find once or twice that he does, two times I can think of, where something didn't go halachically the way he expected it, the way he was instructed. And they had to explain to him why it really was okay. It wasn't he misunderstood or misconstrued what had happened. Ultimately, we don't always associate the two together, but in my mind, they go hand in glove. Kas, in my mind, is an outgrowth of gaiva. And the person who is easily angered is it's coming from gaiva. Now, I will add one more thing that may seem as an inconsistency or contradiction to what I'm saying, and that is, there are people with poor self-esteem who often get upset. Poor self-esteem does not mean you're an anav. In fact, many people with poor self-esteem are actually bali gaiva, because that's how they compensate for their poor self-esteem. And therefore, they're very easily upset because they don't have a good sense of themselves. So then when things don't go their way, they're doubly upset. Because to begin with, they're not happy with themselves. And now another thing's not their way. And ultimately, you find a manifestation of poor self-esteem with bali gaiva. You know, it sounds odd. You think the arrogant people are full of themselves, so they have high self-esteem. It's not really true. I think a lot of them, or most of them, are actually poor self-esteem. And therefore, they fall into the trap of gaiva and kas. If they felt better about themselves, they would be more chilled about things that go on around them and less upset when things don't go their way. So if you want to get to the root of things, how do you build self-esteem? And that has been discussed for decades. And I think it's finally been, I can't say discovered, but finally been addressed or realized that telling kids you're great and giving them good grades when they don't deserve it does not build self-esteem. There was a time when they thought that you'll build self-esteem by everyone being great. They tell every kid they're great. Everyone's a star. Everyone's a this and that. And after years of research, I believe they discovered it doesn't work that way. Because the kids know they didn't do anything to be labeled great and wonderful. You build self-esteem when you work on something and succeed at it. Different people will succeed at different things. But you've got to work on it and succeed at it to build self-esteem. Just to tell someone, okay, you're such a good person, I'm going to give you an A. They may be happy about it because they got an A, but it doesn't build self-esteem. Self-esteem doesn't come from giving people things they don't deserve or don't earn, because ultimately they know they didn't deserve it, didn't earn it. There was a time that people thought that would do it. That was how you build self-esteem. But I believe it's been shown to be a fallacy. That's not how you build self-esteem. The way to build self-esteem is for people to work at things and succeed. Give them the chance to succeed at something, and they'll feel good about themselves. And one thing will build on the other. If there are a series of failures, of course, that's not going to work. That's going to build poor self-esteem. But the midos, like you tell a person, okay, you want to be a naki, you have to be free of gaiva and free of kas. Okay, how do I do that? How am I supposed to do that? Free of gaiva, free of kas. How do you get there? He keeps saying the teva is this way. And this oir hativoi, it's natural. Okay, so I should learn Ramchal, I should learn Mesas Yisharim, I should learn Mesas Swarm. So a person learns this, he won't be about kas anymore, he won't be about gaiva anymore. I don't think it works that way. I don't think that's how it happens. So there's a term, work on yourself. Okay, you can work on yourself. You can work on yourself a lifetime. But is that going to achieve any goals? So then there's behavior modification and other things you learn about. How does a person do this? How does a person come to changing the way he responds to things around him and people around him? So I'm all for learning Musar. That's great. I think that's definitely part of it. I think maybe learning Musar is part of raising your consciousness. It should be something that you're thinking about. Certainly the person who's thinking about not getting angry will be less inclined to get angry than the person who isn't thinking about it. And maybe we could even follow the advice that's described on advertisements on the radio. Count to 10. You're upset about something before you respond. Count to 10. Don't respond. Count to 10. And then think how you want to respond. That's also helpful. Just don't respond immediately. Working on self-esteem, I think, is a good thing. To work on your successes, value who you are. And if you value who you are, then you don't depend on other people's appreciation and recognition from others. And then you're comfortable with yourself so that you don't need for things to go your way, because I'm fine with things no matter how, which way they are. If you're good with yourself, you're good with good, so it's fine. You know, the people who, this is the expression, you give lemons, some make lemonade. What kind of person thinks that way? The person who's okay, so it's fine. We'll work out, we'll make it work, and things will be fine. Instead of brooding and being upset, you can deal with it. So it's more than just learning Musar, and it's more than just reading a self-help book, but it's really just rethinking about who I am and how I respond to things, how I should respond to things, and what do I need to do to get from here to there. I do think one of the aces the Ramchal tells us from the Gemara is just be quiet. Just don't respond. It's very hard to respond when you're angry and remain calm. If you start answering in anger, you kind of work yourself up into a froth and it just gets worse. So if you don't answer at all, it's tremendous gevura, ezu gibra hakovish es yitzro, but that's certainly helpful. Another thing that is in Eitzah Tova, it's not mentioned here, I believe it's in Orach HaTzaddikim, that when you're upset, don't talk loudly. Only talk quietly. If you talk loud, you'll get more upset. If you talk calmly and quietly, it'll kind of calm you down. So don't yell. Don't scream. You respond quietly. If you're going to say anything at all, don't say it screaming or shouting or like that. So that's another way to control kas, that you shouldn't be bekas. sometimes we'll say, don't deal with it today, deal with it tomorrow. You're very upset about something, deal with it tomorrow. Don't deal with it today. I heard this as an ASA from a person involved in community matters, and people call him very upset. And he would say, I'll talk to you about it tomorrow. Right now is not the time to talk about it. The person's too upset. They can't think straight, they're not rational. That's about tomorrow. By tomorrow, they'll calm down, they'll be able to think straight, then you could work through the issue. But now is not, maybe some things have to be addressed right away. But if it does not have to be addressed immediately, let's wait till tomorrow. And that's very helpful. It's very helpful, just wait till tomorrow. I don't know if I read this or heard this. It often bothered me why we need to sleep. Such a waste of time. Why couldn't Hashem make us that we don't sleep? If you get 8 hours of sleep a day, a third of your life is sleeping. So you cut back and you won't get 8 hours. You get less than 8 hours. So you're tired, grouchy. Why do I need that? Why is that necessary? So you'll tell me when you sleep, you grow, when you heal, and you're this and you're that. So the Rebbeinu can make me without it. The Rebbeinu can make it that I could do all those things that I get when I sleep, when I'm not sleeping. Why does it that I have to sleep? And I heard an answer that the reason we need to sleep is because if we wouldn't sleep, we'd be angry forever. You need a chance just to go to sleep. And yesterday is gone, and let's work on today. So that's another etzah. Another etzah, when things upset you, is just, I'm not going to deal with it now. I'll deal with it tomorrow. I'll deal with it tomorrow, and I'll be in a better position to work it through tomorrow than I am today. There is an exception. There's one exception to what I just said, in my mind. I've heard this, I've read it, I've said it. And that is, if a husband and wife get into a disagreement, they should not go to sleep without resolving the disagreement. Now, based on what I just said, why not? Go to sleep and you'll deal with it tomorrow. I think that in a marriage, the longer you wait to resolve a disagreement, the more it becomes to fester and you get dug in to your position, and I don't think it's healthy. I think, and I was told this, and I think it's probably right, if there's something that a husband and wife disagree upon, and there usually is going to be at one point or another, work it through before you go to sleep. Just work it through. It should be resolved before you go to bed. Let it be taken care of. It should not be something which just brews. And it just often over time will get worse and worse. There are many examples that I've seen concerning this. And one that comes to mind is, I heard the story in two different versions of the story. One version of the story takes place in a yeshiva dormitory where two fellows are talking to each other in the hallway of the dormitory, and a guy walks by. And he walks by, he steps on one of them, Reuven's foot. Didn't realize that. And Reuven says, that's weird, stepped my foot. And I say, I'm sorry, whatever. It's okay, nothing. The guy walks back, steps on his foot again. And Reuven says to himself, can I see I'm standing here? Why is he stepping my foot? No, that's okay. The guy walks back a third time, steps on his foot a third time. And Reuven says to the guy, is he blind? See, I'm here? No, I'm in control. Calm down, it's okay. The fourth time the guy walks back, says it for a fourth time. Reuven grabs the guy by the neck, throws him into the wall, says, can you see I'm standing here? Are you blind? Four times you stepped my foot, what's the matter with you? And the guy's like, I stepped my foot? Like, that's how you respond to someone stepping your foot? You go ballistic and go crazy? The answer is, he stepped on his foot four times, and he tried to keep it down, and it simmered and simmered and simmered, and he exploded. So if he would have told the guy the first time, excuse me, uncle, this is my foot, see, my foot, don't step on my foot next time, thank you, and it's over. And Yaakov will be sure not to step on his foot next time. But he didn't say anything the first time. He didn't say anything the second time. He didn't say anything the third time. Or the fourth time, he went crazy. And the guys didn't know where this is coming. Like, what's wrong with this guy? So, if you're not angry at all when he steps on your foot, that's fine. But if it bothers you, you better tell him. Because if not, he'll do it again and again and again. And then you'll go absolute berserk. And he won't know why you're going berserk at him. So years later, I saw this in an article about Shalom Bias. This young married couple, and this fellow is running out the door to go to Shacharis, and his wife says, forgot something, just if you, when you come back, can you stop at the grocery and get something? And it bothers him because he's running out to Shacharis. Now is not the time to give me a shopping list, but it's okay, fine, okay. And he goes, and he goes. And then a few days later, he's going off to Second Seder. And he's like, one second, but just before you go, just make sure. And he's saying to himself, why are you telling this now? Now I have to go. I'm going to be late. But he doesn't say anything. My wife, I don't say anything to his wife. Don't make her upset. He says, okay, fine, no problem. And he goes. And by the fourth or fifth time, he goes totally crazy. What's the matter with you? Don't you see I'm in a hurry? I'm trying to leave. Every time I'm trying to leave. And you say, remember this. I forgot that. If I'm leaving the house, just leave me alone. I'm going. And she doesn't know what's going on. Like, where did this come from? Like, he just spews his anger and he's upset. Built up over time. If he would have said the first time, you know, dear, not when I leave to the house to go to a minion or... That's not the time. That's not the time to tell me the shopping list or whatever it is. Earlier or later, but not then. Then she won't do it, hopefully. But he says nothing. And she does it again and again and again. And he eventually goes crazy. And she has no clue. Why is he going crazy at me? Why is he so upset? And she's terribly offended and she's crying. She's like, this could have been avoided if he would have just said the first time. That's not a good time to catch me when I'm like running late to Shacharis or running to Menachos. That's not a good time. And it's not uncommon for that to happen, that one is running out, the other remembers. If it bothers you, then speak up. Or if it doesn't bother you at all, don't speak up. But don't let it brew to the point that it's just a volcanic eruption. And then she has no clue what just happened. Like, what happened just now? And it's devastating. So, if you're not angry at all, you're not angry at all. If it doesn't bother you, it doesn't bother you, that's fine. It'll never come up again, it's fine. No matter how many times it happens, it doesn't bother you. But if it does bother you, and it keeps bothering you, and it bothers you, and it bothers you, then you better do something about it before there's a volcanic eruption. So, these are the two different scenarios I saw this described. And if a person wants to have shalom, a person doesn't want to have kas, so sometimes you're going to have to speak up early before you explode, before you get upset, that, you know, if we don't do this or we do this differently, then things will be much better or whatever, calm or relax and so on. And usually it's small things. These are kleine kind, things that are easily addressed not to become an issue later on. Some things are bigger issues. Some things are so big that sometimes a couple can't deal with it. They'll go to a counselor, they'll go to a rav, they'll go to someone to help them resolve a serious issue. There are some serious issues that they're not capable of resolving. There's actually a whole movement to have young couples going to classes for conflict resolution before they get married. So while they're engaged, they'll learn how to resolve conflicts in marriage. I'm not saying everyone needs that. Could be some people definitely benefit from that. But in any event, there's the ability to recognize without getting upset, without getting angry, we have an issue that has to be addressed and what we're going to do about it. And they could be very big issues. They could be big, big issues. So if you can't handle it yourself, you go to someone you trust to help you out, to guide you in how to deal with it. So again, for a person to control caste, to a person to control his natural inclination, so again, it's very easy to say, well, just be humble, don't have expectations, everything will be fine. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But there are certain things you can do to minimize it and to control it and to not let it boil over. So again, sometimes it's just not answering at all, just like not going to go there. It's not going to respond. Other times it's make sure if you respond softly, not loud and angrily. Sometimes it's preemptive. You catch it before it becomes a major earthquake or a volcanic eruption. Let's address it early on before it becomes anything worse than that. I'll add one more thing just to ponder. I came across a fellow who says to me, well, I can't help this. I have a temper. I said, what do you mean? I have a temper. By those three words, I have a temper, you've just excused yourself to misbehave your whole life. I have a temper, so what do you want from me? Hashem made me this way. I have the right, the license to get upset at people because I have a temper. No, you do not have a temper. I don't buy into this. I have a temper. It's not like a disability and you're protected by Congress with a law. There's no such thing as I have a temper. You sometimes lose control, so you have to work on that. But the other thing is, I can't. It's like giving in. I have a temper. That's who I am. That's who you are. That's not who you are. That might be how you behave, so let's change how you behave. But don't excuse yourself by saying, well, that's who I am. I think that's a big mistake. There's no such thing as saying, that's my metzius. Since I was a kid, I have a temper. There are people who have a bigger challenge when it comes to kas, and again, I believe it's the people with the lower self-esteem. I think it's across the board you will find this. The people who get upset the most are the people with the lower self-esteem. It's keseder. I meet a lot of people who are upset. The people who are upset are usually very poor self-esteem. They need to be built up. You have to try to don't focus on what they're upset about. Focus on what makes them upset. It's like, don't go to the symptom, go to the source. The person who says, I have a temper, he doesn't have a temper. He may have poor self-esteem, and we'll have to deal with it. But the person who never excuses his poor behavior by saying, that's who I am. That's not who I am. No one has to have poor character traits. No one is locked into that. It's not a physical disability that I must be a nasty person. There's no such thing. So, it's work. Some people it's more work than others. But no one should ever give in and basically surrender to their poor midos by saying, well, that's who I am. It's nonsense. There's no such thing. It's just giving up. So, a person has to realize that. It's never like a person that's hopeless and incapable of being in control. That's what it's all about. Being in control. Being in total control. And Hillel Hazaka was in total control. Nothing bothered him at all. Unflappable. And that was always the madrig of the biggest Bali Musar. Nothing. They're total control. Nothing disturbs them. It's okay. It's peace with the world, so to speak. And whatever goes on around me, so we'll work out. We'll make it work and we'll live with what we got and we'll be fine. It's a serenity. It's a peace of mind. And again, I'm not saying it's easy to achieve, but it is definitely achievable if you work on it.